This is Digital Dave.
I'm Fast Eddie. Oh, wait a minute. Better yet, I'm Fast Eddie.
No, that wasn't better yet at all.
Oh, shut up.
Wait, turn the creepy control down.
Yeah, really.
Anyway, joining us is Mr. Brian Soper from the NTSB.
Oh, you're that ominous sound when you talk about the NTSB.
That's right. You know, you're like right up there when someone says, call the tower.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're not helping our case any.
Were we supposed to? Uh-oh.
Well, you know, we want to be on the same side, believe it or not.
Okay. And you guys get involved usually when we only hear you getting involved after.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's pretty much how it goes for us. Whenever we're coming in, it seems to be after an unfortunate event, and then people are always like, "Hey, it was nice to meet you. I hope I never see you again."
Yeah, yeah, really. Thanks for helping out, but go away.
Yeah, yeah, really.
You guys are charged with investigating all sorts of things.
Yep, all commercial for aviation, civil transportation, or civil aviation accidents all across the nation. So.
If I have an off airport landing and I smash my plane up, but nobody's hurt. Do you guys get involved in that?
Oh, sure we do.
Oh, darn.
Well, we still need to know what happened and why you smashed your plane up, right?
Okay.
So, what comes out of that can help somebody else not do the same thing, right? And that's the objective for us.
Okay, that sounds good to me. I'll buy that.
Yeah.
Well, the way it works is. Something blows up on the airplane or craps out on you, and the next thing you know, you're on the air calling the controller. All right, what happens then with the controller and everything?
And that's exactly right. So what happens then is, so during a true emergency, if you declare an emergency, anybody who has declared an emergency can probably attest to the fact that it changes the level of control. It changes the atmosphere altogether. The focus is on you. The priority becomes you. We will move other traffic. We will land other traffic. We will pay attention to you throughout that whole entire evolution. And it's important during that time is just clear, concise communication. You know, we're not worried about phraseology and things like that at that point. We're trying to get you on the ground safely so we can have a discussion about what happened and get you fixed up and on your way. So, I think that's probably one of the things in the apprehension of pilots to declare an emergency is the real key thing I'd like to, you know, in our presentation later
today. I was just
going to
ask you about that. Two things arose in my brain, which is kind of amazing. I've declared an emergency. I have a successful landing on an airport because you guys did everything you could and got me there. No damage, no injuries. Right. Is that the end of the NTSB involvement with that incident, or are we still going to have a talk?
It really depends. For the NTSB, generally, not necessarily. We won't get involved. If you made it on the ground safely and everything's fine, then that's good. But in the event that there was an air traffic involvement that might have been an incident or something like that, that we might take a look at what happened with that. We do look at air traffic control involvement in emergencies, you know, their reaction, how they work the traffic and how they prioritize. So, the real thing is there's kind of a weird relationship. There's a apprehension on both sides. So you have an apprehension of the pilot not wanting to declare an emergency on the air, but you also have an apprehension by air traffic controllers sometimes that don't want to get in the cockpit and declare an emergency for you, even though they have the authority to do so. So sometimes you, in my investigations and what I'm able to see from the backside is we go in after the fact and everything is forensic in nature. And often we find here were two people that were very engaged and talking to each other, but they were talking around what was really going on, and nobody ever really got across that there was an emergency or an emergency situation, and it ended up in tragedy, right? Whereas if somebody would have just said, "I can't see anymore. I'm not VFR. I'm no longer VFR. You know, like I can't see." That changes everything. Or the words, "I need help." I'm telling you, it will get every controller's attention across the nation. There isn't one that I know that it won't completely change the way you start getting controlled at that time. So,
okay, so yeah, the pilot apprehension, pilot reluctance, I guess is a word. Let's look at the opposite end of the spectrum. Can you get in trouble for declaring an emergency and then after you're on the ground, somebody comes along and says that wasn't really an emergency?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
That's not going to happen.
So, like, I'm just freaking out up here for whatever reason.
No. And if, you know what? And that happens. There is a panic moments for some people, especially younger low-time pilots, right? They get in a panic situation, something they haven't done. And they may get on the ground, and their flight instructor may talk to them afterwards and go, that was not an emergency. It was an emergency to him. And if it's an emergency to you and you're behind the stick and got your hands on the stick, it's an emergency.
Okay. And that's all there is to it?
Absolutely.
No questions.
Absolutely right.
Okay.
Well, that's good to know, because a lot of pilots are very reluctant. You know, they think, is that engine really running rough, or is it my imagination? Now, I've experienced that. It just seems as soon as you get out over water, is that engine running right?
No, you're absolutely right. That's why I say I had so many accidents we investigate, and on the back end we find that very thing where they don't really get to the meat of what's happening. They talked around it a lot. Well, we're going to troubleshoot. Are you declaring an emergency? No, not right now. We're just going to take a look and see what's happening. And
no, I'm sorry. I'm going to be, my response is going to be, hell yeah.
It is. There's a real reluctance. And I mean, hey, pilots are prideful people, and so are our traffic controllers. And, you know, nobody wants to be the one that, you know, does that sometimes, and they think they can figure it out or get it under control or make it work. And unfortunately,
I would be like, hey, can you guys send somebody up here to give me a hand?
Yeah.
That's what we're there for, too. I wish more people would, looking at all these, I wish more people would reach out to air traffic.
Okay, let's talk chain of events.
Sure.
They say so many incidents are seemingly unrelated things that happen that all add up to a chain that leads to some sort of an incident.
Oh, of course.
What are the common ones that you see that are easily preventable?
Well, I mean, you know, something that jumps right out to me, and one of the, you know, backgrounds of why we're doing this one is weather encounters, right? VMC to IMC is just constant all the time. The pilot continues in to think, okay, well, I can still see kind of, I'm just going to keep bouncing around. And then pretty soon they no longer can, and they're afraid to talk to air traffic control at that point because now I'm somewhere where I shouldn't be.
Right, and they know it. Oh, right? God, I screwed up big time.
If I say it, they're going to be waiting for me on the ground, and really that's not it, but wouldn't that be better anyway if they were just waiting for you on the ground?
Exactly.
Okay, so so that's the key. But something that happens very early on, yes, absolutely can kind of initiate that chain of events that steps you right down to where the next thing you know, you're in a much more serious situation.
Right. I've actually seen out cutting the grass.
Yeah,
I've seen GA guy go screaming by at a couple thousand feet, right heading for a squall line.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't think it's a really good idea. And then 5 minutes later, you see him running back the other way.
Absolutely. I wish more would turn around.
Yeah.
You know, with today's navigation aids and everything, and as good as they are you still handling a significant number of lost pilots?
Yeah. I mean, when you say lost, I mean, yeah, pilots that are disoriented, pilots that don't know exactly where they are. We're still having wrong surface landings regularly. Are you kidding me?
Wrong airport.
Really?
Wrong airport.
Oops.
Wrong airports. Wrong surface landings and wrong airport landings. They happen on a much more regular basis than you would like to think.
I can't believe that with all the you know the programs and the electronic flight books and everything.
Hey, there's a lot of guys, but there's a lot of guys out there that just want to get in a little airplane and burn a few holes in the sky and don't want to deal with all the traffic control and the navigation and all that stuff. And
hey, it's not just the GA pilots in that. We're talking about commercial pilots landing on the wrong runway, landing at the wrong airport
with airliners.
Still, past 2020, we're having this with an airliner, which is,
I mean,
the most equipped airplane that we
right,
can,
and theoretically it can fly itself
Absolutely.
Right to the gate. Okay,
well, there you have it. Seems to me to be like a programming error. You're programming the GPS system or your inertial navigation. You enter a wrong key, kaboom! You're a couple hundred miles off course.
Well, you would think so, and you would think that would be easily notable, right? But I mean, I recently just launched on one that was a wrong runway landing, and they went all the way through to landing. The runways are over a mile apart. The one is the 4,000 feet less in length.
Oops.
And a commercial airliner landed on it.
I can just see the guy landing. Okay, welcome to Honolulu. Why is there snow on the ground?
Yeah.
that's absolutely right. That's what happens. It's like, wow. They because they have the expectation bias too, right? And they talk themselves out of it, you know? Oh, the ILS is knocking us to the left. Nope, I can see runway lights. That's it. That's where we're going. And so
wow.
That happens.
Okay. Another reason.
Yeah, no kidding.
Talk to air traffic.
Yes.
We'll help you. We'll help you out.
I'm up here. Where's the runway? Yeah. Can you move the airport to the right a little bit?
I was going to say, do you interface a lot with military pilots?
Certainly.
Do they do that too?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We're all human.
They all do. We're all human. That's right. It happens to everybody. But, yeah, I mean, my background is military. I did 24 years in the Navy before I came here as an air traffic controller. So
you have seen it all.
Absolutely.
Did anybody buzz your tower by any chance?
Yeah, after the pattern was full? Yeah, I'm sure.
No.
So I would ask for a funny story, but I don't know if we have that kind of time.
No, I understand.
So, he's thinking, there aren't any funny stories.
Oh, yes, there are.
Lots of funny stories.
Yeah, the military is rife with them, let me tell
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
And what was your call sign?
I didn't have a call sign. I'm not a pilot. I'm an air traffic controller.
That's true, but they didn't call you Squawky
just,
or...
They just call me Fat Boy.
That works.
I can think of
funny
a lot
they,
worse
they call
ones.
Me that, too. Well... You're still you've been with the NTSB obviously since military, or
yeah. So I retired in 2010, came directly to the NTSB just a few months later. So I've been here for a little over 10 years, I guess.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good.
A little over 11, I guess. Yeah.
That's good, and done a lot of air traffic controlling and things related since.
Sure. Well, no more air traffic control since I've been in the NTSB. Now I just take a look at how they're doing
you
business.
You just look over their
That's
shoulders,
right.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, no, not him again. They don't like to see you any more than us pilots do you?
Yeah, I seen the NACA guys leaving just a minute ago,
They're
like, oh.
Yeah, right.
Nobody.
You get a complex,
don't you? They don't want eye contact, you know.
Oh, no, it's him again.
Wait, you're telling me there's a little bit of rivalry between the NTSB and NATCA?
Oh, it's not really rivalry. Actually, surprisingly enough, we're super collaborative. I mean, we work really great with them folks, especially in the last 5-6 years. It's just that relationship has gotten a ton better. We're accomplishing
now.
A
if I asked the controller that, would he say the same thing?
You know what? I think they would at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But are we competitive throughout? Absolutely. We have fun with that, and I mean that's what you got to do to stay sane in this business.
Yes,
yeah,
it is
very much so. Where can we find you on the field?
I'll be in the Federal Pavilion, and I believe it's Hangar D, right?
Okay.
So we're over there, and I'll be in and out. I have a presentation later today at 2:15. We're going to do a few case studies about a few airplanes that unfortunately ended in a bad way, but hopefully we'll be learning lessons for others to not repeat the same things, and we'll talk about what you need to do to communicate with air traffic and keep yourself from getting in that situation.
All right.
And that's at 2:15 today, and I think tomorrow I have one earlier in the day, like around 11:15. So
okay.
Today's
right.
is in the Federal Pavilion, though.
All right. Well, we've been speaking with Brian Soper of the NTSB, the normally tiny, smelly bagel. I don't know. All right. This is Digital Dave.
I'm Fast Eddie, and this is EEAA Radio.